Our Old Testament lesson comes from the book of Genesis, part of the accounts of Abraham and Sarah, and particularly focusing on the kind of, bad family relationships between Abraham, Sarah, his wife, Hagar, who had borne Abraham a child before Isaac was born. The child Isaac grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with their son Isaac. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac." The matter was very distressing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for it is through Isaac that offspring shall be named after you. As for the son of the slave woman, I will make a nation of him also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes, and she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Do not let me look on the death of the child." And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy, and he grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Our gospel reading today comes from the 10th chapter of Matthew. Jesus is teaching his followers, and in this portion is kind of reinforcing the idea that a life of faithfulness is not necessarily an easy life. A disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher and the slave like the master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetop. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground unperceived by your Father. And even the hairs on your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will deny before my Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it. Those who lose their life for my sake will find it. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Elsewhere in Genesis than today's reading, when God first promised Abraham and Sarah a child, they both laughed in disbelief because of how old they were, and they decided to take matters into their own hands rather than trust God's promise. When Sarah remained barren, she insisted that Abraham father a child with her slave Hagar. And predictably, though, the pregnancy provoked Sarah's jealousy, and she banished Hagar to the desert. The Lord found her there and told her to return and gave her a promise that God would make her descendants more too numerous to count, very similar to the promise to Abraham about the yet-to-be-born Isaac. And the child will to be born, she was told, would bear a special name, Ishmael, which in Hebrew means God hears, for the Lord heard your misery, she was told. Isaac's later birth and growth reopened festering wounds and simmering jealousies. So once again, Sarah drove Hagar and the boy into the desert. And we read this morning as she began to sob with the love of a mother who couldn't stand the thought of watching her child die. And in Genesis, once again, we get almost a delightful wordplay on Ishmael's name to drive home God's point. Where we're told, God heard the boy Ishmael crying, which is basically saying, God heard the boy named God hears. It is comforting to know, though, that God hears us even in the most extreme trials we face. Because Hagar was not the last person in history to have trials and difficult times. Not only do individuals have trials, but communities of God's people can face them also. There's one two-week period I remember from my time pastoring in East Stroudsburg, and at the end of those 2 weeks and during them, the barometer of human pain was very high, and what got me and others through it was trusting that God sees and God hears. Started when I was driving home from work, I noticed trucks and a police car at an intersection near our house. In the trunk of one of the police cars, I could see a horribly mangled bicycle. Turned out the bike belonged to Phil, a 72-year-old man and neighborhood fixture, as he would go riding every day. He was in critical condition when taken to the hospital, and by morning, the radio was announcing he had died of his injuries. Thankfully, the Lord sees and hears. And a day later, a mother in my congregation called me. Her 19-year-old son had come forward and confessed he was the driver who had hit Phil. He panicked and fled. And after a dark night of the soul, he admitted the crime. He was being charged with vehicular manslaughter. It had been taken to the county correctional facility to await arraignment and trial. The father had convinced himself that with the right lawyer, the son could beat the charge, and that's all he would talk about. The son was locked up not just in jail, but also inside of himself. He was not talking, and the mother just needed someone to hear her tears. Lord, you see and you hear. Mario was buried that week. He killed himself when he blasted his girlfriend's Volkswagen Passat down a residential street at about 80 miles an hour at 4:30 in the morning. When his car hit a slight bump, it went airborne, slamming through a wall, a sign, and a tree, almost tearing it in half. John, the passenger buddy who was in the car, remained in critical condition at the local hospital. Mario's was the fifth death due to accident or suicide in the school district during the prior 6 months. And some of his clergy were invited into the school to be available for students to speak to. Thankfully, Lord, you see and you hear. Then the local paper broke a story. One of our area pastors and one of the volunteer hospital chaplains with whom I shared that volunteer ministry, someone I greatly admired in his role, was actually now being investigated regarding the death of his wife in what he had claimed to have been an accident. Lord, you see and you hear. I was asked to moderate the session of a neighboring Presbyterian church. The pastor had left seeking milder pastures than after trying his best with a toxic and conflicted congregation. The latest turmoil was how to respond to a neighboring Presbyterian congregation that had approached this church and said, "Can we rent space while our building is being repaired?" But fear of change and loss of control and whose closet was going to be whose just kind of escalated into name-calling. Lies about the other church's pastor being spread, vicious personal attacks, personalizing the debate rather than seeing it as a question of how are we fellow parts of Christ's body. My first meeting there, 15 angry members showed up to hover around the 9 elders, interrupting the session discussions, making false accusations, and hijacking the meeting. We allowed their input when comments began to repeat. I said they would be excused. The session would be going into executive session so they could get other business done. I was accused of being a little Hitler by one of the people, which upset me greatly because I think I have much better facial hair. But Lord, you see and you hear. A couple at my church got upset about an area of church life and they quickly moved to blaming an individual in the church for the problem. They didn't speak to the person. They didn't speak to the committee that was involved. They didn't speak to the session, who were ones able to respond and perhaps change things. They didn't offer to help. Instead, they just went to other people in church groups with no direct connection or responsibility, complained about the person and the fact that nothing was being done. They sowed negativity and anxiety. They were like an anxiety virus in the body of Christ. The session invited them to a session meeting. And they were told that a better course of action would have been to speak to those in a position to do something, to accept other people's solutions, and that the sowing of negativity the way they had been doing was unhealthy, unhelpful, and they were asked to stop. They left the church blaming me and the session. It was one of those periods of 2 weeks that you don't want to go through again. Fortunately, the Lord sees and the Lord hears and walks with people through those times. I would not have made it without it. People in the community would not have made it without knowing and trusting that God sees and God hears. Now, in today's gospel, Jesus warns his followers and warns us that we will face trouble as a result of our efforts to be faithful. And implicit in his statement that a disciple is not above the teacher is recognition that followers aren't going to get off any easier necessarily than Jesus did. And we are to experience the full range of the kind of life that he led. We should not assume that we will not suffer because Jesus will take care of everything. Jesus tells us our lives will not necessarily be easier than his, but he urges us to embrace the life of faith because God sees and God hears. God is not deaf, dumb, and blind. God is not emotionless. God is not an absentee landlord. We believe God sees and hears human miseries and is there to help us make it through. So Jesus is able to urge his followers to have no fear of those who are against them. In fact, in our passage today, he said three times, "Do not be afraid, do not fear." He is insistent about that the need to let fear away. I mean, not let it rule one's life. He encourages his followers to speak boldly and to remember they are answerable only to the Lord who has power over both their bodies and their souls. Jesus takes time to tell them how infinitely precious they are to God, reminding them that the divine eye is on the sparrow, as we sang as we opened worship. And people are of much greater value than sparrows. God still hears and is with God's people. And Jesus challenges them to hold fast to that faith, acknowledging him before others. The words are still true today. God sees and God hears. And there is a mix around us of apathy and opposition in our culture, in addition to those who are open to the faith. Difficulties happen to us because of events and because of other people. Efforts to be faithful and to go out can meet opposition. A cultural mindset of adversarial relationships in so many areas of life leads us to seek the undermining of a perceived opponent rather than a solution we can work on together. But even in the midst of all of this, God sees and God hears. God sustains us in the bad spells and encourages the faithful to work openly and together in pursuit of God's kingdom. Thanks be to God that the Lord sees and hears. Amen.